The way that we start every single episode is first song that comes to your mind, and we have to squishify it. So first song that comes to your mind.
Oh, well,
squishifying is just
What's in my mind is this. Like, I was talking about doing this outdoor wilderness stuff.
Okay.
And so the song that's going through my mind is this like simple one I learned last time I was there.
Yeah, teach us.
Which we did when we went down to the water, and we kind of greet the day. By going to Pease Lake in
Pease Lake is great.
I love your life.
We go sleep there, there overnight, and we get up in the morning, and we go, and typically we like make a little offering, we pay the land, and then we sing a song. So the one that was we learned recently that's in my mind that I've been singing a lot to myself lately. Okay, I guess we'll do it like call and response style.
Yep.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's it's not long. It's
just hold the mic a little closer to yourself.
Mm.
So it's in like three. So. One, two, three. I'll sing it, and then you guys try and repeat. Cool? And then we can try to do it together. Okay. One. I am grateful to be.
I am grateful to be.
Hearts beating, lungs breathing, joyous and free.
Hearts beating, lungs breathing, joyless and free. I didn't listen.
Even though the hard times are all around me.
Even though the hard times are all around me.
I am grateful to be.
I am grateful to be.
Should we try it again? Grateful to be.
I am grateful to squish.
Lugs beating, hearts beating, lugs breathing, joyous and free.
Lungs breathing, joyous and free.
Even though the hard times are all around me.
Even though the hard times are all around me.
I am grateful to be.
I am grateful to be. Fuck yes!
That was great. That was too good to squish it, even.
I couldn't. I'm sorry. It was great.
We're grateful to squish.
I gotta cite that, though. That's I don't know who originally wrote the song, but it was taught to me by a woman named Saza.
Oh, my God.
Who is cool. My name's Sasha.
Yeah.
Saza. It was great.
Sasha and Saza.
What an intro.
Yeah, it's nice. It feels good. It feels good to sing these songs. I don't know.
No, that's super magical. We've been talking a lot about a lot of people who need to come together more and just sing together.
Mm-hmm.
Are you good, Katy Pady?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
I just wanted to be able to hear more of the timbre in his voice.
Because we do that in church. And yeah. We don't have church as much frequently, commonly, but it's like a very spiritual thing to come together and all like get on the same literal vibration.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Completely.
It's a good way to lock in with community.
So good. And like a lot of these songs that we sing at the group, like the like contour of them and like the style of them. I didn't go to church as a kid, but I like, you know, we all encounter hymns and stuff in life, and I think they're hymnal and they're like tone.
The thing, yeah, hymnal and tone and then energy or just also like, you know, work songs, like productivity songs, like a lot of like hymns were hymns before they were in churches, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were just, you know.
It also cracks the kid code so quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like constantly
kids
singing to my kids.
As soon as you do something like that, it's the rhythm to it. It makes a difference
I
too.
I basically like, spend my whole day singing when I work with kids because I'm just like, we're going to the bathroom now. And you forgot to wipe. Your
don't
bum
to
has a little poop
toilet.
On it, but it's all right.
This is so true.
They must be little ones though, because like I work with kids. I work with 10 to 13 year olds, and yeah, and so like, when we go out on the land, because every 2 weeks we go out on the land. Just last time, I was able to at our gratitude circle, like break the vulnerability and be like, okay, guys, we're gonna sing a song, and we sang a group song together.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, yeah, it was middling middling enthusiasm.
They're aware. They're too aware of themselves.
They're too aware.
The vulnerability is actually quite tricky.
That's the worst thing. That part of childhood where you start to become aware of and like of judgment or self-judgment, presumed judgment, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that really, there's a magic that gets lost, you know, for life. And like that's why I like play.
Well,
so.
They're like desperate to throw it away because they want to fit in. They're like, I'm not a fairy anymore. Mm-hmm. I never was. Don't even worry about that.
That's interesting. I think also but because they're so judgment sensitive and like turning socially outwards, like they're also really... how to describe it, like they're sensitive to well-placed praise because they're starting to build the sense of self, differentiate themselves from each other. And so like if you can give them a really like genuine compliment or help them to see one of their gifts, it lands hard.
Especially, I mean, who doesn't that land hard with?
Like, true,
we're all,
true.
We all, especially artists, we all have a little bit of a praise thing.
At that age too, I find it really lands when you're like peer-to-peer. Like, yo, man, that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, Catherine, congratulations on that great work.
Talking down at them still, you really did great.
But it's like, bro, yes, you didn't fuck up.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they respect that a lot more.
Yeah,
but
true.
But then also when you've got to reprimand them too, because I've worked with a lot of like kids of all different ages. Mm-hmm, and if you're like, okay, bro, that was not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, like that's just.
Yeah, that goes a long way when I like with Tyler's kids too. Like if I'm trying to like exert too much towards them as far as like getting them to like listen, not cool. But if I'm just like, that's not cool. That's like, she's not gonna, you know, like when they're fighting, I'm like, she's gonna remember that, you know, like you don't think it's not a big deal. She's gonna remember, you're the big sister. She's gonna remember everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then like, I just have little conversations and then I notice the difference after. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like a cool part of working with kids is like, you see them take on what you say and adapt it.
Totally. Like, oh, this is totally. So mentor power.
They're learning from us.
Absolutely.
Oh, no. They're a sponge.
Like, oh, they sponge the wrong thing.
Oh, everything. They sponge everything. Oh, can we formally introduce you though?
Yeah,
do you
want
to formally introduce yourself? Because I can't pronounce your last name.
Oh, yeah, sure. My name is Sasha Nicholas Ilnitsky.
Ilnitsky. Okay,
so it's like you're ill. So you stay at home and knit yourself a scarf and you wear it when you go skiing.
I love this.
You can remember that.
That's not even that hard. I'm sorry.
No, it looks terrible.
It looks hard.
Also, you can remember the spelling by saying, I love New York City kid, you jealous.
You jealous.
I am jealous.
I love New York City kid, you jealous.
I'm jealous.
It's a ridiculous mnemonic, but I have to have both of those in my line of work.
Mnemonics are great.
But people call me Sasha or Il Sash or Sash.
Il
Sash. That's usually what people call me.
I met you as Il Sash.
Yeah, me too.
Which actually started because of hip-hop karaoke in Montreal.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, my friend Yakov.
All good things do.
Yeah, as all good things do.
A lot of good things.
My friend Yakov, he encouraged me because he introduced me to hip hop in first year university and also into jazz because he had been a jazz trumpet player and then he taught me about Notorious B.I.G. and Common and Nas and Lupe Fiasco and all these guys who are still like core hip hop legends for me.
Yeah,
but he was Y Clusta and I was Il Sash.
I love that.
And I would always drink a Jaeger bomb before I went on stage like make up for my lack of credentials with just insane hype.
Yes.
I would just be so.
In the hip hop, you can do so much with hype. You can do a lot with hype.
You can find it online. If you look up Il Sash on YouTube, there's my EP, but actually the more viewed stuff is me doing like Sunshine by Atmosphere and Kick Push by Lupe Fiasco.
Oh my God.
You can see me as a 19, 20 year old.
I will note to us later to put it a clip.
Yeah, that's primo content. I'm going to see a little blip on my.
We're going to.
So good.
We got you. What this is all for.
No matter what you're doing, I need you to stop right now and watch this video. We're going to absolutely put this clip in of baby Sasha rapping about Sunshine because it is the epitome of this man's energy and his aura. And you're welcome, okay? Here you go.
And that's what this jam's about. It's about sunshine, baby. We all love it. We all need it. Let's do it.
So, I was like,
Oh,
you got sunshine in you right now.
There ain't no way to explain or say how painful the hangover was today. In front of the toilet, hands and knees, I'm trying to breathe in between the dry heaves. My baby made me some coffee, afraid that if I drink some, it's probably coming right back at me. A couple of Advil, relax and chill, I'm at a standstill with how bad I feel. I think I need to smell fresh air, so I step out the back door and fell down the stairs. The sunlight hit me dead in the eye, like it's mad that I gave half the day last night. A bad sight made me trip on my ass, right into that life. All of a sudden, I realized something. The weather is amazing, even the birds are bumping. Stood up, I took a look and a breath, and there's that bike that I forgot that I possessed. I never really seen exercise as friendly, but I think something's telling me to ride that 10 speed. The brakes are broken, it's alright. The tires got air and the chain seems tight. Hopped on and felt the summertime. It reminds me of one of them Moosob lines, like sunshine, sunshine, it's fine. Feel it in my skin, warming up my mind. Sometimes you gotta give in to win. I love the days when it shines.
Gotta do it.
We want to show all the other people, all of the cool artists. I want to just like connect them all and be like, look how cool and uniquely weird everyone is at the same time. I love connecting
my friends.
Yeah, when I stumbled upon your podcast, because I was like so stoked, because I've had this notion for ages.
Yeah.
Of like, oh, we need a Victoria musicians podcast where you get on and you just chat. Or you, like, my vision was always to kind of mimic Song Exploder and deconstruct a song of theirs.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's
this cool. They take a song and they deconstruct it. They do like explode it and then like deconstruct how it came together, what inspired it, all the different things.
Or is it a podcast?
It's a podcast. Oh. So worth checking.
It's really cool.
If you haven't delved into Song Exploder, like you go through the catalog, you're going to find you'll find like the you know, really popular ones. Like everybody who's a mainline guy, whatever, will do it. But then there's also all these niche people. And it's only 21 minutes usually, very digestible. Mm. And I typically leave with some insight. So I thought how cool would that be to do it with Victoria people.
Yeah, I will say, because I feel bad if I don't say, that Hannah Snyder did attempt to do a Victoria for a while. She was doing the Keeping It Straight with Georgia thing where she was talking to Victoria musicians. I did one episode with her. But she didn't continue it. But yeah it was a similar but different vibes. And but I mean, that's the thing. We're all so creative. Like Danny and Sarah have been talking about, like, I feel like it's only a matter of time and there's gonna be all these cool podcasts from our community, because it's such a good medium. It's such a good storytelling medium.
So I went to a Strong Towns meeting this week, which is like urbanism and like, you know, locally sustainable infrastructure group, and they are all coming together from a podcast called Strong Towns, and they were like, we need to make our own podcast. And I was like, you do. And I want to like bring them maybe on this podcast too, because they're all about just like, and I'm trying to specifically represent the artists in that group. And be like, we need venue spaces, we need rehearsal spaces. But it felt really good to like have the asset already of like a foundation of something. But this was an idea an old friend of mine and I created before I was even part of this community, just because her and I were really big on just conflict resolution and communication. That's a kind of a wormhole I've never exited. I'm just permanently being sucked deeper into it, and just like the ways that we can refine our communication skills. And I think getting to live on an island with only so few, but also like a very rich mix of musicians, but like there's just a little bit more accountability to like sustain the relationships here, makes me just want to like share the skills that I've learned from a lot of getting it wrong as a very outgoing individual who's put my hand in many pots. You don't always get it right. And I just think it's like really important to like go through it and then share what we learn about going through it. Cause so many people avoid this shit, or so many people avoid getting deep and squishy and stuff because it's the easy thing to do. And it makes a lot of sense. The world is asking so much of that energy from us already, but I want to like make it seem more accessible, make it seem easier. And a lot of the musicians that I surround myself with and artists have already figured a lot of that stuff out, cause art just asks that of us too. And we're practicing it in our day to day.
We go through it all the time. That's something I wanted to do as well, because I just met so many interesting people, and I just wanted to kind of like hear their stories. Like it's all different vibes, but somehow on similar energies.
Yes.
And just a fun way to bring people I know together and like talk to them and capture stories and just have a little time capsule of our existence here. And then I saw Tasha's story talking about how she wanted to do like she was like, should I do a series about conflict resolution like on Instagram? And I was just like, girl, it sounds like you're talking about a podcast. And she was like, actually, I had this idea. And I was like, you know, it's funny, I've wanted to do a podcast, but I didn't have anyone to do
Katie's
one with.
Like, I can
and so
talk.
We both were just like, oh yeah, let's do this. It's like,
that makes sense.
Both of us had this outside of this, and then like in different ways. And then I like Tasha was just like, I'm making these things for Instagram. And I'm like, well, why not just make a podcast?
Katie's
so
perfect.
The ADHD fire under my like overly structured
brain helps you add more structure.
Yeah, of course. The yin yang.
But speaking of sharing stories, I would love to hear how you ended up in Vic. And since you've been here, like, you also have your hand in so many, many pots. So, like, kind of maybe a little bit of a rundown of what your portfolio would look like if you were to look at it right now.
Okay. That's an interesting question. Thank you. I came to Vic. Like, the main reason was, I guess it would have been 2016. Yeah, roughly 2016. I was really in love with a woman named Jackie, who I still adore. Shout out, Jackie.
We love you, Jackie.
And Jackie had early in our relationship, before we ever met, she intended to move to New Zealand. And so we met, hit it off. She moved to New Zealand, and I was left in North Vancouver and was like, I feel like I need to change too. So I moved to Victoria and moved into the Dangle Dome, if you guys are familiar with that place. But back when it was the South Gate, the one on near Cook Street Village, so that was the second generation Dangle Dome. And moved in there, got embedded in that community, which is a wonderful like art space and music space and just like intentional community of joy. And I met those people and they welcomed me so warmly, and they also welcomed that I kind of had to go to New Zealand. I kind of came to that that decision. So I basically lived there in this tiny thing called the womb, which was a, like a little mini room built inside another room. It was like corrugated plastic and had like a carpet door.
Excellent.
No natural light. And it's I lived with my friend Elena, who was my womb mate, and Elena, shout out to Elena.
I spent
about 4 months in that space, and then while I was working a ton of jobs, like I worked at Sylvan Learning Center, I did whale watching, I worked at the Bug Zoo, and I served at a Greek restaurant, and
those
I just like
awesome jobs.
I pulled up the money, I went and joined Jackie. Her and I spent like about a year traveling through New Zealand, India, and Nepal. And then sort of I convinced her to come back here with me, and we moved back into the dome as a pair.
Wow.
So that's how I came to Vic, which was, and I like honestly love it here. It's become my chosen home. I've at times made little forays away because I feel like it's good to leave your comfort zone and get the challenge. But like,
Where were you born?
I was born in North Vancouver.
In North Vancouver. Okay, cool.
Shout out to Capilano River.
Capilano.
Yeah. If you ever go there, it's a beautiful river.
Nice.
But yeah, so that's that. And my, as far as like my portfolio, I mean, like, typically, I guess, I don't know. I think my main, like, squeeze is that I'm a teacher, but then most other people know me as a musician. And I think you guys, like, maybe asked me when I was coming around to, like, talk about how I got into music. And that was kind of interesting because, like, I didn't really, like, I'd always really loved music. Like, I was first introduced to it by probably by my elder brothers, who have very different tastes. Like, one is kind of into, like, almost like Canadian alternative stuff, like Our Lady Peace. And
yeah, sounds like my brother, too.
Like, and then, like, Incubus and Nine Inch Nails and things like that. Nice. He introduced me to that, Radiohead. And then my middle brother is really into indie rock, like The Strokes and, like, The Hives and, you know, Franz Ferdinand and bands like that. And being being eight years younger than the oldest and 4 years than the middle, I got kind of exposed to this really great music early on.
Great.
My swimming teacher was also really big. He was the first to burn me CDs,
nice.
Which was so sick. Yeah, no, I was actually really scared of water. He was like more just like a really nice guy, and my parents hired him to teach me to swim. But, and it also involved like sitting on beanbags, eating pizza pops, him teaching me about like Tom Petty and the Chili Peppers and all these bands that became big.
This.
And like, I like, so I just like loved music. Like, I loved listening to it and collecting it and didn't really formally train in it. Like, I had like this bad misadventure with learning violin when I was in grade four, and it was, I was terrible, petulant child.
But the system is also.
It wasn't for me, but I like getting this big appreciation. And then, so I didn't really study it in high school. In high school, I did a lot of improv and theater, which was my connection to like the artistic. And then when I went to university, Yakov, Y Cluster, him and I were living together in second year, and I would always be walking around singing. Like, this is a typical thing. If you know me, I'm always like singing a song while I do stuff. I can't help it. It just sort
we're
of
going to the
comes
bridge.
Out. Yep. And it'll typically be like a song that's a in song. My head. I'm not like singing what I'm doing, and I'll just be singing what's on loop.
Yeah, there's a radio in my head.
And at a certain point, he was just like, I think out of love and also out of some irritation, he's just like, Sasha, you're always singing. Like, go join a singing group or something.
For the love of God, take this seriously.
Take somewhere, like, you know,
put an outlet for this other than my eardrum.
Go bother
precisely.
Someone else.
And he was into straight ahead jazz, like Miles Davis, John Coltrane. He didn't want to hear me singing, you know, whatever, Ariana Grande or whatever I was into that day.
Yeah.
So I was walking around singing in my place, And he made the suggestion. So I looked it up. I was studying at McGill University at the time, which has an unbelievable amount of a cappella groups. So there's about a dozen, and I chose one called E-Fusion. And so I went to the audition, and I sang I'm Gonna Find Another You by John Mayer, if you guys know that song.
Oh, I'm gonna find another you.
He's great. Yeah. Shameless lover of John Mayer.
Saw him live once. Fucking insane.
He's insane. He's insane. Insane. He's beautiful. And his so career is wonderful.
So hot and funny, too.
Funny, what? Hot. He's like got so many modes of writing. Anyway, I sang that, and I also beatboxed, because I was just like, why not throw the whole thing in there? So I beatboxed for them, and I think on just like Moxie, they gave me a call back, because like I was like, whatever. Yeah, like
Moxie gets
I had Moxie,
far.
Had to Moxie. Get to the callback, and it was mortifying experience.
Excellent.
Because it was like everybody there had done like high school choir, glee club, anything. Whatever, had been in a cappella groups. Yeah. They were like, McGill was full of people who were just such keeners. And I was like such a, you know, greenhorn neophyte guy. Go there. They like, we do a little warm up, and then they split us into quartets, and they give us a sheet music of an a cappella song by a Finnish group called Rioton called Butterfly, which is such a beautiful song. But anyways, so I was the bass in this quartet. We like were supposed to learn the song. We had like one of the members of the group there to sort of teach us to play the piano and teach us our parts. And I'm like looking at this. It looks like complete gobbledygook to me. I'm not a musician.
No.
Have never really studied beyond this grade four little foray.
They're expecting you to sight read.
They're expecting to sight read. Oh my God. Sight read. And as the bass, I'm like, I'm the core of the tuning and everything, right? And it's like, this section is.
Hell no.
This section is hectic. It's hectic. It's I encourage people to listen to this song because you'll get a fucking appreciation for this song.
Under the story.
It's the part specifically where it's like, tomorrow I'll die, tomorrow I'll die. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's all about metamorphosis.
The irony, because you're in that moment being like, I was today I am dying.
This is my ego death right now.
Totally. I was having that ego death. And then we get called back to the big group, and they're like, okay, so you guys are going to perform in your quartets. And we start, and I'm like so off. I just like stop. I'm like, I'm so sorry, but it is not fair to the other three people in this group. I don't know a thing about what we're doing. I need to stop.
I love that.
And I felt bad. I like just felt like a total idiot. And the guy who was the bass section leader like takes me aside. He's like, yeah, like, sorry, it's clear that you don't know how to read music, which is a prerequisite. I don't know how you got this far.
And then you're like, but have you seen my jazz hands?
Have you seen my Moxie?
My Moxie, sir.
I got a huge Moxie.
On a hip-hop hype man skill.
It's not here right now,
here.
But I promise you.
I promise it's huge, yeah.
Give it like 10 minutes.
But anyway, so he takes me aside. He's like, you know, you can't be in the group if you can't read music. Bless, yeah. So you should learn some music theory, learn to sight read, sight sing, and then come back in the future. I go home, come through the freaking door. Yakov's sitting there. I'm like, Yakov, I got blasted. That was horrible. They freaking ripped me apart. He's like, what happened? I was like, they made me read music. I don't know how to do that. And he's like, oh, that's the problem? You don't know how to read music? And I'm like, no. He's like, then learn the piano. That's the way you read music. And I'm like, oh. I'd already had a little bit of like... You know, like had learned dibble like dabble. Bing blong blongs on the piano before, but like had never really been had a conscientious go at it. And then something about the embarrassment of that event and my love for Yakov and just the simplicity of what he told me to do, just like it all crystallized. I bought this little, you know, 45 key Casio thing on, you know, I think it's Kijiji in Montreal, the used thing. I started learning songs off YouTube, and then I found a teacher named Helen, who was just such a beauty, and she was a student at the school who was doing a master's program, and she just like took me under her wing, and like it became a total obsession for me.
Nice.
So while I was doing my undergrad in non-music, I just would practice all the time. I like completely reorganized my life as things were getting like more and more rewarding, and I was like getting my chords and getting my arpeggios and starting to be able to read and like working my way through repertoire and all this stuff. It just became this super fulfilling thing.
A bit of a bumpy start though.
Totally.
But it seems like that kind of fueled you.
I would have been in second year, so like 19, 20.
That's awesome. A lot of time, you know, there's a lot of attitude out there that like you have to have been doing it forever to be able to like, but that just goes to show that like you can go from you know, not knowing how to read music and trying to be in an a cappella group to like teaching all these different
things. I think that's cool music rare things. What you did though by sticking to it though. A lot of people will just be like, fuck that shit, I'm out. You know, because it's so vulnerable. Singing specifically, being a vocalist.
Spooky, spooky. I love the support of like the hip hop. A lot of business, I was just telling Tasha that a lot of people don't see the supportive side of the hip hop community. Because a lot of people see like a lot of the misogynistic like rap battle side of things.
Oh, of course.
But there's such a weird underbelly of support that you don't see. And it's kind of like the way that a lot of like certain tough on the outside people are guarded in that way. They're like, they want to, you have to work for to see that side, you know, you have to be here, be part of it to see that side
hip-hop's
more.
It's a very
so
collective art form compared to classical music specifically. Like you have your homies and the boys in the back and you gotta stick together and you got your little pack and like you're all like, it's a hype thing. It's
a
part thing.
And it's hype man in the corners.
Okay, it's so funny you say this because like my like so like that's really what Victoria has offered me the most is because prior to coming to Victoria, all I did was play classical music.
Okay.
I did like Helen was classical, so classical. She was a beast. And I was like, that's the path. So I was learning Bach and Beethoven and Chopin and whatever. And then like, and that's very solitary. Like, I would sneak into the McGill practice rooms. I made a little fake ID. I was on that level.
I love this.
I
renegade.
Printed off a new version of my ID where I changed my degree to be Bachelor of Music because you had to put your card in the window.
I love
Hell yeah.
And I would like, if they had an RFID card to get in, I would wait around the corner like tucked like a little mole, and then I would hear the beep of somebody going in, and then I would zip around the corner to sneak in.
This is amazing.
And I would carry like food in my backpack that was non-perishable so that I could be in the practice rooms late and not leave past the barrier door.
Oh my God.
It was crazy. So anyways, I did that for four years during my degree and then moved to Vancouver and lived in my parents' house for 2 years while I did a classical diploma at Capilano, which was a different experience. I was finally playing with other musicians and finally doing like accompanying, but still it was pure classical. And then when I moved to Victoria, I started jamming and was like, oh my God, like this is such a satisfying thing to do.
This is what I was born for.
Improvising is so fun.
Improvising is my favorite thing.
It's so cool, and like I love locking in with rhythms and making little 5% offers and like holding something steady while stuff transforms around you. It's so cool, and like I still do sometimes drift back towards pulling out sheet music and learning a classical piece, which is in its own way very satisfying. But in terms of like, you know, I don't know, like reward and like potential, I feel like the improv space is so much more
fun. Self-expression is
totally.
I've noticed too that like in an improv space with you, the couple times that we've jammed together, that 5% offering and like watching the room come together and like knowing how to guide that, that's a very like teacher brain thing to do.
And knowing when to step back too and not be shining and stuff and like leaving room for others to do things. I've definitely found myself as a vocalist in the jams with you following what you're doing on keys more than anything else because I'm like, I know I can lock in where Sash is holding it down.
It's a very welcoming like balance because it seems like it's always been destined, and it's interesting hearing your story. It sounds like you've been destined to be this collective musician, but you did come at it at a bit of a like independent approach too, which is curious. But I guess you always were in teacher's college.
No, I was doing an undergrad in history and psychology. And then teachers become like teacher was a later thing. I actually decided to become a teacher really around age 30.
Okay.
Because, I kind of always knew I wanted to teach, but, and like, I've always had a, I'm 34.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had like a teacher mentality for a long time though.
Yeah.
I had a lot of amazing mentors throughout the life.
You have that like old soul mentor vibe going on.
People tell me I have
older than 34.
I met this, the boxy, abundant boxy. Somebody once told me at a party that I had teacher face.
At a party.
It was actually at the bakery. It was actually at the bakery.
Not surprised.
It was my friend. So my friend, Mark, his wife, who was from Japan, who had just recently like immigrated to Canada. And like, so she was just working out her English and et cetera. And I was like, yeah, I'm Sasha. She's like, oh, you know Mark from teaching. I'm like, yeah. She's like, you have teacher face.
I love that so much.
You have teacher face. And now I think about that.
That's
we're
going
to give it to the camera. Do I have teacher face?
We're going to have to do a vote. This is going
to
be.
Have to do a poll.
We're going
to
do a poll.
Do I have teacher 100%. Face?
You look like my teacher. You're too smiley for any of the teachers I ever had.
It's a different time.
You're like what we want our teachers to
be. You say that. I got my frowns. I got my I got my expectations. I got
You didn't practice.
Not honestly with the music kids. Like I know nothing's make or break. Like and actually as my career in the classroom has gone on, because I'm also a classroom teacher. As my career doing that has gone on, I've realized less and less is make or break. Mm-hmm. When you first start, you think everything is so important, and that they're never going to pick up that skill if you don't give it to them in that instant, which is really wrong. But yeah, with the music students, because I know in particular it's just meant to be like cheesecake of life.
Yeah,
I will never ever make a student feel bad for not practicing.
No, that can really kill the judge.
Music, people who are interested in the arts are naturally like prone to criticize themselves as it is. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take a lot from the outside. As much as it's important to take constructive criticism, support needs to be part of that. Mm-hmm. Like people like to like say constructive criticism as an excuse to just be blanketly like opinionated about everyone's craft. But really, it's like constructive criticism is meant to come from a place where there is also support that is also like, you know, like, here's the constructive part, which is the support I'm offering you to reach the place you're trying to get right now that you're missing or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I had one. Sorry. I was just
I was like, I've been waiting to ask this question about going to, you went to do a specific teacher thing in Dawson, right?
No, not in Dawson, in Betrico, Northwest Territories.
Northwest Territories.
Shout out to Betrico, Ray Edzo. To my people.
I love that. Yeah. So, yeah, tell me a little bit about that and that experience. Because it was such a cool... I loved watching the adventure, like what you shared and like seeing a little bit afterwards.
Oh, man. It was... Yeah, it was an amazing experience. So challenging and also just very enriching. And I think it's like a universe. It's honestly like... I've lived in Montreal and I've spent a lot of time in New Zealand. I had a period of time in Australia and Vancouver, and I've been in lots of different places, but there was nowhere that was as different as living up there.
Yeah.
It's basically 100 kilometers outside of Yellowknife.
Yeah.
Tiny community, roughly like 2,000 in the whole zone.
It's really feel immersed in what you're doing in that state, because you're
definitely,
there's not as many distractions.
Definitely. And like, gosh, I mean, I've now had many, many conversations about this, and I guess I might, if I can bounce the question back to you, is there a component of my experience you're curious about? Because it's so much. We could have a long conversation first, simply
like
about that.
A Cliff's Notes for people who might not know about like what it was that you did when you were there.
Okay.
Like, and then also like what my main thing, what's the biggest takeaway from that experience that you would recommend to others to take on some kind of challenge?
Yeah,
like
that's a cool question. Okay, so the Cliff Notes is I moved up there on the invitation of my middle brother, Micah, who's also a teacher. He had moved up there and invited me to come and co-teach with him.
Cool.
So we both taught a grade 9 class. Well, we taught 2 grade 9 classes, the Saws, which were the beavers, and the Digas, who were the wolves. We like gave them a different name than just 9A and 9B. We're very different, him and I.
Does he also have teacher face?
He does have teacher face.
That's cool.
Yeah, he has teacher face.
Runs in the family.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. My mom's a teacher. And I've got 50% of her genes. So.
I love it.
So Mike invited me up. He did the humanities and I did the sciences and math.
Nice.
And yeah, like he stayed with me for the first year, and then I did a second year by myself individually. Mm. You know, the community is super different than Victoria. It's 99.9% indigenous. It's Dene, the Klitschon people specifically. There was a couple people who were from different countries. There was a guy from Morocco and there was one family from the Philippines, but the vast majority were indigenous, and they were so welcoming and, you know, gracious and kind and funny, and working at the school was completely completely different than everything I had done to that point.
Yeah.
And challenged tons of my assumptions about learning. Like I talked before about, you know, early in my career being more rigorous and concerned about things. And this place really taught me about the importance of the socio-emotional component of the classroom, like community and safety and humility and all the things, the bonding. So like to achieve that, music was actually a really big aid. Like I ran karaoke events in my class. I had a little music club. I taught music to the kids. And that was really neat. Yes. And it sustained me up there. There wasn't any hip hop or classical. There was just country. So I played in like a native country band.
Dope.
That sang, that did country and rockabilly, but in Klitschon. So
you had to learn the language.
Yeah, I knew the choruses.
That's cool.
I would just go like, Taga wo
hideho. That's
amazing.
That's iconic.
I love that.
And they would sing their stuff.
I love learning another language.
Oh my God. And these guys were all very old. Like David, who is like the leader of the band, was in his early 70s. Wow. Our drummer, Captain Eddie, was in his mid 80s.
Captain Eddie.
And they would all have chewing tobacco, and we would sit in this cold ass garage.
Hell yeah.
And we would play. And Captain Eddie had an electronic drum kit.
Yeah.
He played on an electric, so we all practiced on headphones. It was such jangly shit. I would bring my keyboard and mostly play organ. And we sang we did some rock and roll songs. Like we did like CCR and like weird 80s ones I'd never heard of. And, you know, like John Fogerty and things like that and whatever. And then, but we'd also sing these country songs. And so, yeah, and we would like play for the dances and and do things like that. I don't love country music, although I did come to appreciate it more and more.
Yeah. Well, when you see how it unifies people, like whatever the music is, that's the goal, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, doing the two-stepping with people. Honky tonk.
There's a lot of cool. Yeah, I grew up around that stuff, so I have an appreciation for it. You know, like, but there's a lot of good and bad in the any musical genre. There's that good and bad.
Totally.
Yeah, and then coming back to Vic must have been quite different again, eh?
Yeah. Oh, I had insane reverse culture shock when I came back. That's its own tale. But I want to address the last thing you said. Like, I think the thing that I took away most from the folks up there, which was a really good lesson. I think because it was very much a mixed experience. I will not say that it was all positive. Mm-hmm. There was enormous challenges, and profound loneliness. Mm. And if you listen to the music that I made at that time, mm-hmm. like Fireweed, the EP was written and recorded up there.
Okay.
So the forlornness that underlies everything and the loneliness and isolation that kind of pervades that project is very clear evidence that I wasn't like actually okay.
Yeah.
However, that doesn't mean that it wasn't a good experience. But the thing that I took away that was most positive, and maybe this is a characteristic of small towns in general, but the most neat thing about that place was that everybody was very accepting of the imperfections of one another and like very radically tolerant of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear that small towns are intolerant and they don't like difference. And the fact of the matter was actually that like everybody had like fucked
everybody's
up shit in
got
their life.
Their shit, and you're just like, I like you, I might not like that shit, but we're still neighbors in
totally,
a very small town.
Exactly. Yeah. These mentors who I like came to, you know, confide in and trust, they would talk to me about like their 20s and 30s when they were like alcoholics and they were abused and abusers and all this stuff. Yeah. And people just seemed to like get past it. And the nicest thing is that people just sort of like accepted you for exactly who you were, and they were, you didn't have to be ambitious.
Well, I think it's also they can relate to one another, right? Because when you're in a very dense part of the world and there's lots of different people that you actually can't really relate to, it might be a little harder to hold the empathy that they maybe can. Yeah, but then it's like a whole other element of it being a part of the world that is particularly like you know, taken advantage of and really underserviced. So
so with all that and like being said, what, and that being the takeaway, what would you like say to someone else who's like gonna take on some kind of crazy challenge,
considering
like that,
going up there,
you were saying, like, you know, you leave to challenge yourself to experience the thing, like, and you've, you know, there's the good and there's the loneliness and there's the extreme challenge part. Based on your experience, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's gonna endeavor into something like that?
I think that I was introduced to a mantra when I was quite young, about 12 or 13, from somebody I did theater with. Shout out to Sheena DuPont. Sheena told me once in a very high pressure, like, it was a high pressure improv situation, which is weird to think about, but I did like improv in high school and it was very big for us. And we would cry and we would like get so worked up about our performances and stuff like that. And she told me when I was like freaking out before a show, she's like, Sasha, there's no pressure, no diamonds is what she said to me. And I feel like if your instinct or intuition is to go and put yourself into this challenge, like, you know, you're going to be dealing with, you're going to get exposed to poverty, or you're going to get exposed to whatever you might be going into, and you recognize that there's going to be pressure on you, like, recognize as well that there's going to be, in the long run, there'll be some teaching that you get from that.
Beautiful.
It's going to harden. It's going to harden a piece of you in a way that's going to make you more resilient and more able to like deal.
Well, can I add to
bring out that shine?
Bring out the shine, the bling.
That's awesome. And I also think that, like, you know, we value diamonds by like taking very good care of them as well. And I've definitely, as I've gotten older, have that mentality of I want to like do the hard stuff. But that means as much as I ask for myself, I need to give that back to myself as well. I need to give that love, that tenderness, and that self-care back to myself. So I kind of like the diamond analogy of thinking, yes, now I have this beautiful thing, and I put it in a very soft and squishy box, and I close it, and I let it rest every now and again.
Give it the care, because it went through the pressure. Yeah.
You know, I've been saying this thing for 21 years, and like I haven't made that connection. Mm-hmm. And like what you just said is actually, I'm feeling like expanding the metaphor even further. And like, if we think about diamonds, like they're created through this like very like intense process underneath the earth, and like in the process of transformation they must be kind of like unseemly and kind of like primordial and like messed up and like not crispy and clean and shiny and beautiful.
And so that
like that's a component of it as well. That like there's going
to
be this
sit with the times when you're not shiny and beautiful in order to get to that end.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that.
Most of it. I feel like 99% of it is that.
I think you do. You have, I feel like you have a good understanding like that, just like reading like your recent stuff and like how you plan to care for yourself. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a good, like it's, a lot of people don't have that like at your age, especially sense of like, oh, I need to. Like we're all so programmed to just push through everything, you know, push through the goals, the adversities, the accomplishments, whatever. Like push through, keep going, keep chugging along,
high
stay
energy,
busy. Da, 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 da. But we don't. Our culture doesn't often like put that care and emphasis on the balance of like the self care and like knowing what you need and speaking what you need and all of that beyond like the weirdly like, you know, self care industry, like beyond the points of where they can sell it to you in a consumer fashion, like go get a massage,
still
go to a spa.
That as part of supporting the diamond, right? It's like actually part, it's like not taking away from it, it's adding to this like sustainability of the whatever you're putting your energy into.
And I'm really grateful that when I chose to go to the North, I stayed the second year.
Okay.
Because if I had left after the first year, which was really challenging, more so than the second year, I think I would have had, I think when I moved up there, I became more attuned to the, like how important stories are.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I leave after this first year, I'm scared of the stories I'm going to tell about this place, which is a very beautiful, profound, like place, no place I've ever been before. If I leave now, what am I going to tell people? I'm going to tell them about how hard the school was, how kids didn't show up, how I was like lonely as hell, how the environment was really crazy, like all these things. It's like I didn't it, like I would have left in the middle of the transformation,
the
and learning. Then people would, I would have presented them this like goop, black coal carbon goop, and they would have been like, man, I'm sorry that you had that experience. But staying the second year and allowing things to settle in and basically, I think opening myself up to the community itself, as opposed to seeing myself as an outsider, it allowed, they provided this like mold for me to like see the diamond within.
And I love that you can use the like how you would express the story to others is actually your own experience.
100%.
So you're like,
that's it.
I need to do justice
doing
by
it for
my
the plot.
Own experience. But for the plot.
For the plot. But 2 years was enough plot for
like,
me. I'll say.
This isn't good enough. You're like, I don't like this plot story. We got to keep going.
But yes, if you're going to do something like that, be prepared that maybe the longer you stay, the better it might be as well.
Hello, it's Tasha here from a week ish after we recorded this episode, and I just wanted to show you guys a little bit of Sasha's EP. We talk about it a little bit in this episode, and it is just a luxurious sound bath of textures. And he says that he's a little depressed when he made this album, but honestly this song in particular that I'm going to show you really gets the blood going. You kind of want to like bop around, you can't really help move your head. So this is Infrared, and it's from his album Fireweed. So check it out.
Stay the course, why not dare? You'll give too much infrared. Clever machine, put a man on Mars. Pave our way among the stars. Because we can, should we go? Trust the fire, spare our home. It's misery. Slow burn, a century. Seems so strange.
clocks are going faster in a single day. Destiny carved in the DNA of every little
I wish I had, like, honestly, I was, like, so, yeah. I wish I could say that it was, like, oh, everything was so instinctual and intuitive and yada, yada, yada. The, like, months preceding my departure from the North were just, like, I was so not with it. I was so not together.
Wow. Well, that's the thing that happens. Like, we're not, like, our intuition, you know, listening to it more and whatever doesn't mean it's always going to, you're always going to be so certain, right? It's that moment of, like, which is the right decision and, like, being able to quiet the fears in the mind and whatever and listen to like the intuition, you know, like separate, know yourself well enough and sit with yourself and the feelings well enough to know that like, okay, which feeling is this? Is this anxiety? Is this fear? Is this dread? Or is which one's the intuition? What's, you know?
And I find like putting yourself in those uncomfortable positions force you to figure that skill set out because you're having to like rely on yourself. And you have to like the lonely moments, like where you're just, you know, you're out there, you're not supported by like a cozy, cushy family or someone holding your hand through it. You have to like trust yourself because no one else is helping you through it. And then that builds like that reliance and the trust on your own.
And it teaches you how to build a new community around you when you need it, like that you can, that you have the ability. You don't necessarily need only those people that nurtured you in the place you were comfortable with. Like you learn to branch out and make new community and meet and like make friends and build bonds and then have that to lean on.
Yeah. And there were people up there who were my salvation for sure as well. Mm-hmm. Like it was lonely, but it was, I also, I encountered like very great depths of kindness there from people who could recognize I was in distress and help me. So.
And I think an experience like that gives you such a good ability to reflect on your own feelings and understand how you feel because you sat in that loneliness, as uncomfortable as it was, like getting to know and listening to like those feelings, and then that you come home with more of a certainty of like, this is what I need and want for myself, for that part of my soul that like aches when it's lonely, you know, like
Yeah.
And an AP.
Yeah. And people here are also really like well versed in that kind of stuff. Like they're like, there's been, I don't know if I was just kind of not so aware of it when I first moved to Vic roughly 10 years ago, 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it seems like in the last few years, there's been a big, like, I don't know,
emotional step forward. Awareness.
Yeah. Step forward. Maybe it's just how the community has changed, but it just seems like people are so much more comfortable talking about you know, expressing their needs and like these like concepts of like holding space and feeling things in your body and like things that like the more, you know, whatever part of me would like roll my eyes at a couple years ago.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a lot of factors that come into play, like the experiences we lived through where everyone was like forced to be in lockdown and only reaching out via like whatever communication modes they had. And also, like, I give a lot of credit to the people who, like, do disability advocacy because, like, the pushing for, like, disability rights is what brings those kind of terms to the forefront, like access needs and things like that and knowing, like, and knowing what is overstimulating versus, like, I'm just a person who can't handle a situation. I'm just a person who has this issue and I don't know what's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it's
because
all these,
they didn't have the tools or the language for it. So,
so like, I give a lot of credit to disability advocates who, like, make people aware of these things and that they exist and that like there is language to describe what you're feeling. It's not just like I am broken and know how fix, you know, like that's how I felt for a lot of time. Like I was like, I just feel fucking broken and I don't know how to fix it.
Yes.
And without like copious amounts of expensive therapy I couldn't afford. So I
and that,
you know,
was the story.
And if it wasn't
had,
for
yeah.
disability advocacy like teaching me different words and being like, oh okay, if I just do these things then like I can avoid this anxiety point. Like, and if mm-hmm. I do the, if I prepare myself for the, like, I can handle this tough thing, but I have to prepare myself for it. And I have to know when I'm reaching my limit and pull mm-hmm. back, and how to do, mm-hmm. how to care for myself in those moments and not just, you know, mm-hmm. hurdle mm-hmm. myself through it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. That's interesting that you guys have had that shift in the perspective of Victoria. 'Cause I've been here for 6 years, but only really in this community for about 4. Mm. And the whole time it's felt like
that for you,
the coziest, just cool. I don't know, that's most awesome. Aware group of young people I've ever met.
I noticed it a lot when I started jamming with like Ranger and the people from Vernon and stuff like that, and like just meeting like younger folks and really noticing it in younger generations, because like you're closer to my age than a lot of those guys.
Yeah,
but there was that mentality to like eye roll at anything sensitive when we were growing up. Like, oh, that's ridiculous. That's the way they say cringe now, you know, like we cringed at everything in the 90s and 2000s. Like, it was cool to cringe at things, like, you know, it's like especially if you had a sibling that listened to Our Lady Peace and stuff.
Oh,
they thought everything else was uncool.
Yes.
My brother will listen to this and laugh because he was definitely one of those kids that was one of them, like, I know what is cool. And then, like, he also now listens to Taylor
they
Swift
held
just
the
as much.
Standard.
So. But you know what I mean? It was, but that was the era we grew up in, where it was like, it was cool to not like things.
Definitely,
it was cool to not show emotion. Mm-hmm. And it was. And,
he avoided life.
It was very much mask or die, like you know, and
which is a very like British colonial way of existing, actually. And I don't tie it entirely to the Brits, but I come from a very dry, sarcastic family, and sometimes I like tie that back to just like our very North American way of like shoveling everything down and avoiding it for the sake of the fact that we are all in this like pressure container to thrive individually and like succeed, and the feelings get in the way of the success. But the strongest people are the people I know who have learned how to sit with both, and then both support each other, right? Like, the feelings support the work and the work can support the feelings when they're like an abundant thing rather than a scarcity of both draining each other, you know, the two parts of the brain, one could say.
Great. That's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah. And I think for me, I wouldn't be joking if I said like 4 years ago or whatever, prior to maybe going up north or actually becoming a teacher in the classroom, like I would probably have rolled my eyes to like certain phrases I find myself using all the time now. And like, I think part of that is definitely from like people, taking me through it. Be it like, people within the, you know, Dome community, or my friend Madison, and working at this school for lots of neurodivergent kids, and all the language that gets used there has been really instructive. But it's also kind of like, I don't like, it's
language is so important.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I've historically like felt like shameful about like things like grief and things like things like,
our societies are really busted on how we deal with it. Like, it's very busted. Like, we're supposed to turn every adversity and every grief and every sad feeling into some triumph. Like, otherwise it's unpleasant. Otherwise it's shameful to sit in it too much. And like, in sitting with grief, we learn a lot about ourselves and like how to grieve and stuff. I found the most in all the grief I've gone through, the most helpful book I ever read was It's Okay, You're Not Okay. And it's all about how our society deals with grief in such a backwards way, compared to how we used to like gather and grieve deeply and loudly and whatever, and through song and whatever.
Again, like you saying that you felt broken because you just didn't know how to like navigate yourself.
Yeah.
That's what our society feels like. It makes you feel like you're broken for dealing with these emotions like grief and stuff, because we just don't have the tools to know how to deal with them. Our society isn't really built with those.
And it's not always just you go through the five stages and that's, you know what I mean? It doesn't work like
no.
that.
Yeah. No, it's crazy how events and like challenges can send you back to do unfinished work at an earlier life, like phase. Like, for example, this, like what I've kind of recognized recently is when I was in high school, because of being embedded in this drama program, I was like really working hard at like, you know, the same questions I'm kind of dealing with right now in my life. And weirdly, like going through the grief of my like recent injury and leaving the North and like other things that have happened, it's allowed me to kind of go back and continue that stuff. It's like I took this hiatus from like feeling things.
Yeah.
And I got really in my head from like roughly 20 to like 30.
That's a long time to be in there.
Yeah. I convinced myself that I was like a really cerebral like person because I like to read and I like to talk and I'm a teacher. And
that's very supported and sought after. In
totally. And it became this thing. And
this
insight that I'm actually like heart driven person is, it's very, very new.
I know. The voice you did was like, took me right back to the 90s. Oh, heart driven. Like you're literally mocking yourself.
Still,
I love it.
There's still that inside me.
I love it,
me.
But that's but the thing.
This insight is so recent that it's literally so real. You're still going
through the discomfort of feeling it.
I recently started seeing a counselor named Barbara. Shout out to Barbara, who's amazing. Barbara is a beast. So recently she asked me this question, which was, what do you want to attract? And I won't tell you because got to have some mystery.
Keep that razzle down.
The most interesting thing about that actually wasn't necessarily what we discussed, but it was that I was like, she's like, think of it like a triangle. Like, I want you to think about what do you want to attract in terms of thought? What do you want to attract in terms of action in the physical realm, and what do you want to attract in terms of feelings?
Thought, action, feeling, triangle.
Might have heard of it before. I never heard of it, and I was like, "Oh, well, it'll be easy to do the thought one." And she's like, "Why is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, like I'm a very like you know brain cerebral person." And she's like, "I don't think you are." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, go on." And then she gave me all these like because we've only had a couple hours of work together, but she gave me these very specific examples where she's like, "Actually, like you weren't able to even you know you said you couldn't." Make the EP until you had like a sufficient amount of like emotion to describe that the EP was your emotional release when you're in the north.
Cool.
You couldn't have written music without that. So is that what a cerebral musician would do? And I'm like, no, I guess not. And she's like, so she gave me all these examples and like
proof, which a thinker needs. They need proof. need proof.
Yes. The thinker needs proof. Exactly. So the thinker was like, oh damn, Barbara, that was slick.
You gave me an argument I can't argue. So therefore, damn, Barbara, I have to consider its validity.
Yes, exactly.
Damn it, you have got me in my thinker brain because now I have to consider the validity of the point that you've just made on this, and it's so true.
She's good.
I always saw you as a heart forward person. Funny enough,
totally.
People who I feel like have a whether they're hiding it or not, like have a good deep emotional heart.
Yeah,
I feel safe around them early, even if I don't know them very well. I feel a weird sense of like intuitive safety or comfort.
Oh,
and then
thank
as
you.
I get to know them, I'm like, oh, it's because they have their. I see they got the feel in there, you know.
It's totally reciprocal. Yeah. I felt the same when I met you.
And with you too, actually.
All those things.
Thank you.
So I'm grateful for that, and that's like a really cool thing to discover because, like, you know, without going into too much detail, I'm going into a very, very difficult period of time with the surgery and the recovery and
your heart, big time.
Definitely. But it's been incredible, like the response that I've gotten from people and the kindness they've shown me and the like. My friend Esri recently talked to the day that I got the news that I had to have this surgery and I would maybe potentially lose like speech as a result of it. I was feeling really messed up and they took me for a walk on the Songhees Walkway and they were talking about, I feel like this is a nug that needs to be shared, even though we're not talking tons about music, that's okay. But this is a nug that people need to hear. We were talking about like best case scenarios, worst case scenarios. We were talking about my worries and my fears and my hopes. Yeah. And then she's like, you know, hope and fear are kind of like very similar. If you think about it, they're about projecting into a future that's uncertain and having a vision of how you want things to be or not be. But it's at least like it's imaginary. And she's like, so really like, what might be helpful for you is not to think about hope, but to think about trust.
Yeah. I think the tipping point for hope and fear with me is anxiety. If your anxiety is high, then you tip towards fear. If your anxiety is in a controlled, grounded state, then you can tip towards hope.
Interesting. Okay. So literally there are two sides of a seesaw.
To me, I feel
and based
like,
on your level
that's
of anxiety.
That's the visual I have when I think about it as a seesaw. Yeah.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
And so to get off the seesaw, if you will, she shared with me this idea that trust is what you need to focus on.
Yeah.
The things that are, you're like, I know no matter what goes down, the best or the worst, these are the things that I expect are going to be there for me.
Yeah. I would say hold on to that because as someone who's gone through a lot of anxiety and like struggled a lot with like fear of things going wrong or for the future or whatever, just uncertainty and just struggling as a human with untreated anxiety for a lot of years, like that is spot on. Like as far as my experience goes, it's just like, yeah, it's focusing on the things that you can trust. Because for me, like when I used to get really bad panic attacks, and when I would get those, like the things that I know are real and true and can trust that they are real and true mm-hmm. would be the way to ground my brain from the spiral. And then mm-hmm. and the people that I can trust mm-hmm. to see me in any state that mm-hmm. I know that they are there. There is no mm-hmm. nothing like they got me, you know, like that was always a thing I could come back to and be like, oh, I am this because I can. And even when you're like someone who struggles with your self-image or you doubt like good things about you, it's like, I know this person is, I can trust that what they're saying is true because mm-hmm. they're so honest that if they had something bad, like Dani Jackson is mm-hmm. one of my beacons of trust. Because mm-hmm. if she has some She's shit to call me out on, she will fucking tell me what's up. Like mm-hmm. she will tell me the truth, even if I don't want to hear it. And that is like rock solid trust mm-hmm. in my brain. So it's like, it's totally. One of those things like that. Yeah, it will get you through a lot.
Yeah, if you're like, if you're somebody who has like these kinds of doubts in your mind, which I will as well, it's like you almost need like an external source yeah. to like keep you honest. Mm-hmm. So you don't like drift into misery or like yeah. whatever, or into like yeah. mania. Like you need to have the term I learned this year. You guys know like touchstone, like the idea yes. of touchstone. Do you know that touchstone. Was actually like an object that you would use to test the purity of gold?
Yeah.
It was like a certain type of rock called a schist.
Yeah,
and you could and they push would gold against it, and it would reliably tell you if it was real or fake gold.
Yeah,
so like people like Danny are like
miners, the gold miners.
Yeah, they're like a touchstone. She's definitely a touchstone. That's so cool.
Yeah, I definitely was like a touchstone for my dad when he would have manic episodes. Like I would be the like calming person in the family sure. even as a kid, which is a weird job.
It's a lot of weight. Yeah, but what this brings to my mind was something my dad taught me when I was going through like a really shitty work experience. Mm-hmm. I was pretty certain that I would get fired, which I did, but I quit the same day that I got fired, so it doesn't really count. It cancels out. But I was like living in this like fear every time I'd get anything wrong that my job was already done, yeah, it was over, there, I was yeah, fired. Like mm-hmm. every mistake I had felt like 100%. Yeah. And then he called me out and he was like, you are already fired in your mind.
Yep.
And you've every time you are yep. putting your mind in worst case scenario, you're also putting your nervous system through worst yeah. case scenario.
You're living it. Again
your
and again.
Brain yeah. will manifest the reaction, the response, even if it's not actually happening yeah. to you. So mm-hmm. on top
very true
of
as far as the brain, the whole that's very
fear
real.
Thing. Yeah. If you're like putting your mind and your body through the fear symptoms all the time, that's just like extra weight and you're not even there yet. It's like, mm-hmm. but then again, on the flip side of that, if you have the power and like the control in the toolkit to focus on the hope stuff, focus on the positive stuff, and then like play that out in your mind on repeat mm-hmm. rather than the opposite.
Yeah.
The nervous system is there and your body knows how to take care of you mm-hmm. better when you're in a more
like.
That's
why like one of the things when they're panicking is like to you say five senses, right? For you say point out five things you can see, four you can hear, yeah. three you can mm-hmm. smell, two you can touch, whatever. Yeah. And you go through that and it's like it's just reminding you what is real.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
your brain is feeding you all this not real stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this phrase is like, I'm not my thoughts are so common in those kind of mm-hmm. avenues mm-hmm. when you're dealing mm-hmm. with anxiety mm-hmm. and anxious thinking is like that reminder that like the reality that you are role playing in your brain is not necessarily a reality and you mm-hmm. can step out of it at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also role play the best case scenario, like you know mm-hmm. so yep. sometimes I try to remind myself, I'm like, okay, I just role played the worst case scenario mm-hmm. so I need to balance it out with the best case scenario
because I am a big booty sexy queen millionaire,
you know, like can't live in the worst case scenario.
I got double D's on these crazy. And all the men love me. mm-hmm.
I just picture you as like a cult leader. That's so funny.
Oh my I got God. These bitches for days. Bitches and hoes.
But that's really good advice. That's really good point.
You're going into this with hope and trust is good.
Yeah. Oh, I got the best. Like, honestly, shout out to all the peeps.
But you are what you eat too. That means maybe that you're showing up that way.
I don't know.
So you're eating the right peeps. Is that what you're saying?
Eating the right peeps.
It's also just because I wouldn't be me if I didn't say it too. This is obviously going to be such a crazy hard thing, and it's going to be okay if mm-hmm. it's totally valid and okay mm-hmm. if there are days and times when it's just a lot and it's like, and you're just like, damn, this sucks. Like, yeah, don't live in that thought, you know, mm-hmm. don't replay it all over and over and over again, but mm-hmm. also don't try to hide from it because it's a reality that you're going through, you know.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try to delude myself. Mm-hmm. The way that like, I feel like the advice that I got from Barbara, that's really working for me. She's like, just like, love your body right now.
Yeah.
She's like, just give, like, get gratitude for it.
Everything
just like
can.
Pump it up. like notice all the nuances, all the things that work right in it. Because I think like, you know, mid-30s, everybody gets something going wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to like discount this incredible relationship I've had with this vessel.
Yeah.
Like it's served me as a musician. It's served me as in athletics. It's taken me to the
I was just high gonna ask mountains. If you played team sports.
Yeah, it's taken me.
You just got to give yourself swimming. The pregame coach talk.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I like, you know, this. Like, yeah, like you can't throw it all away because I have like a couple wayward vessels that are now in my brain.
Some wayward
like
vessels.
Everything else is going so great. So I'm just trying to like, yeah, just like trying to experience that as best I can, which frankly, like it's something that's a little harder for me in a way. Like the, I don't know, like I talked about being embarrassed about like, you know, like the eye rolly thing, and like literally the word body has that kind of effect in me for some reason.
Like thinking about like caring for your body, you're like, oh, that's and so like gross. Being in your body, God. Be present in my body, how fucking
exactly. Then really like that being in your body phase. I'm like, the everyone's head, in your body.
It's true. Yeah,
you've been in your head for a decade.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we
it's
all
also to the way you come through, up. We come up in an era where that's just the fucking touchy feely.
We have our like habitual everyday body like activities.
Yeah,
but it's totally different than actually checking in, aligning, like breathing. Is so simple, but that actually makes such
the
a
meditative body scan was one
head.
Of the like greatest tools for me that I learned in the mindfulness workshop I did once was like just the body scan, like going through the body scan meditation stuff, and you're like, oh, okay, this is
good. Totally
with my body and what it needs.
Yeah,
but you're doing the thing, even though it's making you feel like eye rolly at yourself. You're taking the time to think about what your body needs and care for it, and that's huge.
Yeah, and like the there's a person named Madison who's really important to me, and I've known them for the last 2 years because we teach at the same school. And there was like an early interaction that we had once where I asked them how they were feeling, and they like closed their eyes and they like went like, and they like, they kind of explored, and then they gave me like kind of, they gave me the answer. I actually don't even remember the answer. I was more just like transfixed by that like pause. Actually check in.
You didn't just give me the surface level answer.
Precisely. And I was like, and I, because I interact with Madison a fair bit, like I'll notice these times when they close their eyes and I'm like, oh, then there's something happening in them and for them right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it like has this like halo of sacredness around it. And I'm like, what are they perceiving right now in the situation that I'm not? And my instinct is often that they're thinking about their kids because they adore their kids.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how are their kids being entered into this for them? So it's just cool. So I like, you can say be in your body, blah, 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 as much as you want, but it's actually witnessing people
it
use
makes,
it
yeah, you
and
see
then
how
seeing
it's used,
like, how
okay.
tremendous they're like.
What's the proof?
Honestly,
I was just going to say the thinker needed proof.
Their integrity. Proof. It's the integrity of it. And you're just like,
yeah.
God damn.
Yeah.
You have so much integrity.
Oh,
yeah.
It's
and
so
it's because
true.
They're getting in there.
Yeah. And like one can say that about any kind of human experience of like the positive or the negative or the spiritual and the non-spiritual. It's like whatever someone fully believes, that is their existence. That is their reality to them. Therefore, it's real enough for me to buy into it and to be like, I support this for you. But then also that stuff just like works. Like just checking
it does,
in
and like,
taking it slow. Just anytime I'm slower than my normal operating speed, I am so much more chill. I highly suggest ashwagandha. It is my favorite herb, and it just regulates your cortisol levels and has the only time in my whole adult life I've ever been able to achieve no thoughts.
Wow, that's
without
huge.
Being like intoxicated or something.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's really awesome.
I feel like interested in taking what we were just discussing, this notion of like when you're in your body, experience integrity, and relating that to music, which is like our shared domain.
Yeah.
Like, how does that feel? Like, how do you know when that's happening for you?
For me, when I'm improvising lyrics, like it's a mix of two, weirdly, because like a lot of the time I'm very conscious of you as singers, especially we're conscious of like if we're doing what sounds right, if we're hitting what we want to hit, if we're going to have the breath for the next thing or whatever.
Yes.
And in improvisation, I feel like it's this moment where like I'm physically in my body, but also somehow not there at all. Like my brain, like my body is present, and I'm so connected to my body
like
that my brain is shut off, and there's just like a channel opened up to the creative.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's just coming.
So there's
through.
No monitoring.
I'm just a vessel. There's no monitor. I'm a vessel
right.
for whatever comes
that's
into
so
my
cool.
comes out my mouth, and that's that. And that's why I don't record shit, because I never remember it after it happens.
Yes, yeah, you've like mentioned I this before, James. Yeah. You're like, yeah, I don't remember a thing I just said.
Yeah, I asked Ranger to send me something from that last one, because I was like, I liked it, but I don't know what I did. And he's like, that's so funny every time.
Like, to me, it feels like a game. I feel like I go full child brain.
Yeah, you got playful.
I love
you
that.
You play music.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I feel like my life mission is to play, and I'm very grateful. That's a great life mission to have. Mm-hmm. But I want to help other people get into that playful space, because it's done so much for me to be able to hang on to like my inner child. And she just gets to blossom in that space, and she doesn't judge herself. And she's just like full on like, let's see what can happen over here. Oh my God. It's a bit. Oh my God.
I said it before. That's what drew me to Tasha too, because I had the same eye roll you have about myself being playful. Like, you know, so it's like, one of those interesting things.
And so like like with Madison, you're seeing something, a practice that they embody that you're like, I want to be
that witnessing moment that you had, but with Tasha and her playfulness.
So
yeah.
But like finding other people who get that just validated me so much. And I didn't get that until I moved to Victoria, where people like take play very seriously.
Bunch of playful weirdos in this town. It's
totally
great.
Yeah. But like take play seriously with their super like technique based talent too. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then it's like magic. It's like, whoa, it's like you took this so seriously that you trained it, and now our play is like crazy cool. Yeah. Like our play is like a different level of play.
Yeah.
And I want other people to just like nibble on that, because it can be so medicinal for people to go into a space and just be like, let's break all the rules and like fucking see what happens.
Yes.
It's so cool.
Yeah. But I totally hear you when you say like play, but then it's enhanced by the expertise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like for example, Shane, like I was able to jam with him so naturally from the get-go, because he's simultaneously so fluent and also so open.
He's such an eyes up player.
Yeah. Like, and like, I'm so comfortable. Yeah. I'm so comfortable looking in his eyes. Like, same. I can be like locked into a piano groove and looking in his eyes and not even have a moment of like
a weirdness
hesitation.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's the key
too,
with most
especially
of
especially
because
I would
folks.
Play with Tyler and Tyler.
Oh,
when,
Tyler
well,
Lee.
So talented, so amazing, and so present.
Shout out Tyler!
His eyes, his brain, he goes into another planet sometime. And
totally.
Like there, right? Whereas he's then I'd be playing with Shane, and Shane would like look me right in the eye and dance with me on stage.
Yeah.
And I'd have the best of this both worlds. Like,
totally.
You know, I'd have
you
Tyler
have
over here doing his thing,
cosmic,
who's floating off in space, making cosmic shit happen.
And
then I got Shane
tethered.
Here dancing
locked
with me
tethered.
And like, you know, vibing with me. And
totally.
Yeah, it's such a huge.
Yeah,
huge
no, thing. I love it. I love it. So I definitely tend to value like folks who bring that out with me. Another one of those is my friend Tess, who I met during the classical program.
Cool.
And like started, you know, writing songs with, and she's the one who really invited me into starting to sing, because she is an amazing singer. Shout out to Tess Meckling, Lizel on Spotify, Lizel. Check her stuff out.
You're so good at this.
And also,
the shout outs are so good.
Yeah, well, I just got so many people.
Give
you
a heads up, because I just realized that we got distracted, but the time is 6:50.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's maybe we'll work our way into a wrap.
I just felt like I had to give you
no. That's
like,
actually
that's
really good.
Soon.
But I guess I was gonna say like like those like the people who like strip you of like the self consciousness. Because I've been in jams before where it feels so I'm like, and I like this. I won't roll my eyes at all. Where you're just so in your head.
Yeah,
you're like, technically we're all playing the same chords. But this is
feel like
I actually feel like not ill, but like a little sick.
No, I get it.
Like,
I get it.
It's so not jiving.
Yeah.
Technically, this should be fine.
Yeah.
And it's like there's this little low key dread that you're experiencing. You're like, is the next one going to be like this?
Sometimes
how
I
is this even going to end?
I just can't sing
again,
until
how
the vibe
is this song
is right.
Even going to end?
I think you're in the fear.
It's definitely fear. It's fear of like, oh man, I organized this jam with these people. I thought it was going to be good, and it's not. Or fear that
weird.
Like they're thinking I suck. Or fear that like, you know, whatever it might be.
So
and yeah, like. I'm not a singer, and although I do sing like every so often then a jam, I'll sing a song just to like, you know, whatever, get out of the comfort zone. But for me, like what you're describing about it feeling like a channel, it's the same experience, but through the keyboard.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And like, I just love it. Like you can close your eyes or lock in. And for me, I think the signal that I'm like in it is I like smile.
Yeah. I get
smile.
Smiling.
I'm just like,
I start to dance too. I
smile
and I move.
I smile.
Yeah.
I'm just feeling so damn good. I'm smiling because like, you know,
spontaneous laughter. I'll spontaneously giggle.
Play, you're just letting it happen. Yeah. You're not, restricting it to anything. Yeah,
exactly.
Just letting it be.
Not limiting yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to maybe do a jam soon.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm having one on Sunday.
So this Sunday?
This coming
and
Sunday.
And then you also have something on the 14th, right?
15th.
No, it's not a jam on the 15th. It's like a benefit show.
I want to come to that, too. Yeah. I just want you to
I'm not going to perform at that, though. No. Because I'm probably going to be way too, way too emotional or whatever. I don't know what I'm going to be, but
we're going to hang out and just hug people and stuff, whatever you need to do.
I don't know. I literally kind of
in the planning phase.
I kind of stepped like out of being involved in organizing it because I'm kind of being really like not self. Yeah, I guess I'm being kind of selfish right now, to be honest.
I'm kind of you're just leaning on your community. That's what you're doing. It's, you know what I mean? You're seeking support. You're accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You're allowed to be that level of selfish. You know what I mean? It's selfish always has such a negative connotation, but I think there's a positive side to it too.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you can be, when you're a giver and a people pleaser, or when you're just, you're not used
you're
to
just,
doing
you're
that.
Giving yourself
it's
a very
yeah. You're allowing yourself to lean on your community. Like you've got people who are willing to plan it and to field the questions and do the things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let them do it. They want to love you in that way. So you're also giving them the gift. I was told this because I'm also not good at accepting stuff sometimes and support when I'm struggling and I don't want to feel like a burden. And it's like allow your friends the gift of showing up for you and taking that burden, like some of the burden off your plate because they want to and it gives them something too. They feel good.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like they become the like they're the gift. Like they're like it's what they're doing. Its value comes from the fact that it's that you're accepting it and that it's being spread through the community. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So
thank you for being our gift today and finally making this chat work. And I feel like it happened exactly when it needed to.
Totally.
In line with how it needed to.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And like Katie, you suggested before this, like, cause I don't know, I should give a little smidgen of context to people. Like I'm going through the surgery soon. And one of the possible side effects is that I might lose my speech. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it'll be super, super powerful if things like that go down that I can go back and listen to this.
Yeah,
like where was I a week or two before?
Yeah, exactly.
And like what was like to almost to remind myself if I'm in like you know, if I'm really
grieved.
Yeah,
and if you're having a bad day, you can listen back and be like, oh, yeah, I got to
get
the trust.
Yeah, these are the actual ideas. I got to believe myself.
I got to listen to my own words. So
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So this will be a time capsule for me.
Yeah,
it's a gift
like,
to
I'm
future
glad,
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also a gift to future us.
Yeah.
Talking to you is wonderful. Yeah. I love your stories.
I always take a lot of lessons away from everyone that I have talks like this with, whether it's on a podcast or not. But I really always enjoy it, especially through the podcast realm, because then I'm more thinking of like, you know, questions that I want to ask on a deeper level than just a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I always take something away, but especially this time, I feel like there's a lot of reminders in your experience that I needed for my own brain.
I feel like you're like 75% of the way through your wizardom and you're
there's definite wizard vibes
like
coming.
Last 25%
first trip around the sun
of your wizard like achievement unlocked.
That's a very thoughtful thing to say.
Well, because
you're in a past life progression, I feel like that'd be an interesting one for you.
They ask
I wonder
a lot
who
of
you
us,
were before
and
this
it's because you're like collecting all the jewels that you're gonna put into the machine that's going to give you this big epic super cool hat and a wand and you're gonna be like this bad bitch and Ilsash is gonna be like like trotting around casting
he now needs like a wizard costume with a hat that just says it's the Moxie.
She know,
we
love
needs a wizard hat that says it's the Moxie on it.
It's Demoxie.
It's Demoxie on his
hat.
Like
gemmed. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks guys. It's been really a delight to talk to you.
Let's plug your Fireweed album. Right?
Oh yeah. If you want to listen, if you want to listen to the only thing I ever did all by myself, it's on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Ilsash ILL SASH, and the EP is called Fireweed. It's 19 and a half minutes, and it's about lots of things. Yeah. I hope you like it.
Yeah. We'll feature it on our Have You Heard for this episode.
It's about lots of things and highly recommend if you're in that mood where you're like back when you were young and you'd get in that mood where you just need to put on an album and stare at the ceiling and feel things. It's a good one for that.
Hell yeah. I love how many people experience it differently.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's an audio diary. But some people are like, oh, I love it for gardening. And some are like, oh, you know, it's a perfect drive. And I'm like, yes.
Gets
new life in different years.
Right? Oh, that's the gift of music. So.
That's the gift.
Groovy, baby.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Really appreciate that. Squeeze.
Very happy to have you.
We want to thank everyone who made Squish happen. Specifically, we would love to thank Alana Ahlstrom and Renata Baldwin for the wonderful background music for our intro and outro, as well as all of our vocal squishers who offered your cute little voices.
so adorable. We love you so much.
I want to thank Katie for editing together our intro and outro soundtrack.
And Tash for doing the video editing and a bunch of great graphic design work.
That's right. We're thanking ourselves because we fucking did this, bitch. Yeah, if you've made it this far, thank you so much for sticking around. And we hope to catch you on the next episode.
Heck yeah. Thanks to everyone for being part of it.
Love you.
Love you.